Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about Gladiator 2. Adam just got back from seeing it. I saw it last night. Actually, you know what? Before we talk about Gladiator 2, okay. I did watch a couple of other things. Well, did you get a chance to see the Penguin finale?
No, I haven't. I've been stuck at work this week, so unfortunately, I have not.
All good.
There is a show that I want to talk to you about right off the bat because I think it's probably one of the things that you want to talk about. I'm very curious about. Is it Saint Denis?
Yes.
Is that what it's okay?
Where I'm very curious. There are three episodes in. Saint Denis is. It reminds me. Of course, it reminds me of Parks and Rec and Superstore, and it comes from that group, a member of that group, which we had a nice text discussion of, like, yes. Has any show been as, like,
influential?
Yeah, and not even just influential, but people from that creative team.
Yeah,
went on to create shows that are also maybe not as great and long lasting as The Office, but are super high quality shows. Saint Denis is in that. It's definitely in Superstore level. I don't think it's quite Parks and Rec. It could get there though, because it has the heart that Parks and Rec ultimately has.
And like, if we remember, Parks and Rec was really not that great the first season and a half. It took literally a season, like it midway into, now I wouldn't even say midway, towards the end when they introduced Rob Lowe and Adam Scott's characters is really where it kind of found its voice.
The end of season two. So yeah.
And then The Office is the same way. I mean, two seasons.
Yeah, that first season of The Office is really rough. There's some solid stuff there that lays groundwork, but it's not till like somewhere in season two that it really does its own thing and starts like giving these characters more than just like the buffoonery, you know?
No.
Saint Denis is swinging for that off the jump. Like it's trying to hit that heart. Like the end of every episode has had this massive moment where it's like, don't forget that. Like it shows you that they're people and they're flawed and they're goofy and they're stupid, even though they're in the medical field. But then at the end of every episode, something happens and it's like, yes, but they're also doctors and nurses and this is what they do. And when the shit falls down, they're there, like they're running to it, you know?
Is it kind of like, I was going to ask, is it kind of like, you remember how, like, at least the movie and part of the TV show MASH was kind of like that mixture of both comedy and seriousness. I mean, especially it's way more
comedy than serious. Okay. MASH for me, MASH wasn't enough of the goofiness. Like this leans more towards Scrubs, although I don't think it's at Scrubs level, like not even close. But there's not a ton of drama. Like the dramatic stuff is literally, it's been in the last like 90 seconds, 120 seconds of every episode.
Mm-hmm.
They hit you with 2 minutes of like Yeah, they're in a hospital and shit can go sideways. The rest of it, like the last episode was really focused on like they were gonna have to operate on this lady, routine operation. She didn't speak English. And she refused to go into the operating room until she got her cross. She wanted
Oh.
her cross, not any cross, her specific cross. Well, when the
Okay.
cross shows up, it is literally like a life-sized cross.
Oh,
Then
shit.
this woman, like throughout the episode, the woman that works the front desk of the ER is dragging it, like trying to
Oh,
get it
God.
to her.
Hilarious.
It's really goofy, but it sparks this whole conversation about like religion, superstition, like, and David Alan Greer, who I think we collectively, maybe not you and I, because we know, but collectively as a society, especially people that love entertainment, have been sleeping on this man for way too long. We
Oh,
have
yeah.
forgotten that he is hysterical. And he launches into this whole thing about how the phony baloney, like it's all BS, like none of it pays any like plays into any scenario, like it's all. And so what happens is like this series of like bad circumstances, because he like specifically calls down a curse. And they're all just like, don't do that, don't do that. And
That's
so it's like all these little dominoes start falling, and it's really, really funny until the end. And like the last 2 or 3 minutes, it's not just silly things that are happening, it's like real, like life or death shit. And there's just this really, really sweet moment where he's like, yeah, okay. Like, yeah, I'm glad I'm here, but like, there is some, something, maybe, we don't need to like take it necessarily for granted, people's beliefs. But yeah, it's really good. It's better. I think it's better off of the start than most of the shows of its type, but it's not nearly as good as those things, like at their high point. If they give it a shot, it can get there. Like, it's a good pairing with Abbott Elementary for sure.
okay. Nice. And they're using it as a lead. They're using Abbott as a lead into this show, right? I think that that's what I saw.
Yeah.
Like it's like on right after it's on right after that. It's on right after Abbott. So, I mean, if you watch Vertical TV, and I mean as opposed to fucking horizontal TV. I'm excited for this one. I saw the ads for it and I put it on my like little docket and stuff, but like, you telling me that you had seen it and you liked it, I was like, okay, this is definitely one that I
It's
have to do.
definitely a good watch after a rough day. Like, just like sit down, like laugh a little bit, have a little bit of a like cathartic moment, and then feel good, because of course it's a TV show, and I'm sure there'll be episodes where things don't come out okay at the end, but for now, everything comes out okay at the end. They save the day. You get your little feel good along with your catharsis and your feelings, and like it's a really, really solid show that could be really, really great. So,
Right. I will definitely I will definitely report back once we've watched the couple of episodes that there are there.
you also asked me last week, had I watched Cobra Kai yet? And I said I was going to catch up to it this week, and I did. I know you were trying to catch up. Did you get up to current?
No, I did not. I got
Okay,
up
yeah.
to I think I'm at season three right now. Like at the end of season three, headed into season four. I mean, I'm making my way, but like, I'm definitely enjoying it more than I like. It's one of those shows I feel like that's progressively getting better and better. Like, they're finding the right way to approach things. Like, that first season was really fucking wonky. Even the ending was wonky.
The first season's very... So, the first season was YouTube Red.
Yes.
And I think some of the second season was...
Yeah, the first
or maybe... Yeah.
And then they dropped it. And then they dropped it, or they did something. I cannot...
I think YouTube Red just went away. Uh-huh. And Netflix was like, yoink. And I'm pretty sure those episodes were already done. I don't know if anything was done after, but like we're just talking about, it hits its like stride. They learn how to make this show about mm-hmm. 4 or 5 episodes into season 2. Like, it stops getting like uneven, and you're just in it.
No, absolutely. Like, I will definitely say that, like Cobra Kai, like it starts up like it, like, you know what it is? I know what it is. Like I could tell the quality because somebody told them, stop acting like this is a joke show and take it fucking serious. Like, take it absolutely seriously. Like like, make the teams, like, stop doing this weird kind of distance thing and treat it seriously. But in doing so, it feels like they're fucking with you, but they're really not. And it kind of allows you for, like it allows you to embrace everything. Like, it's okay. Like, it's okay to take it, like, it's okay that it takes itself a little too seriously, because that's what teens do. I don't know. It's a weird kind of, like, I like the fact that it's kind of shifty with its tone. Like, do you know what I mean by that? Like, it's never, you can never put a finger on it, right? Like,
it's like, are they trying, is it comedy? Is it drama? Is it, like, satire? Is, like, uh-huh. It's all trying to do all of these things. Sometimes it really succeeds in doing all the things, and sometimes it fails at one or two of them. I think the comedy part of it, especially when it comes to Johnny, they mm-hmm. always nail that. And I think it has more to do with William Zabka, like, really embracing the dickishness and dumbness of that character while not making him like a complete doofus.
No, absolutely. Like, I the thing that I feel is the magic trick is the tone of him, because he never, like, it's like the perfect Venn diagram of being an asshole but also being a human being. Like, he's never not a human being. He's never, like, a caricature. He's always, like, there's something always kind of a little grounded in reality with whatever he's doing, which is always funny to me, because I feel like he's the linchpin, or he's the grenade pin, actually, for that show. And it's like, as soon as they figured out how to, like, let that pin go and, like, let the grenade, like, go and drop and run, like, that's where it became, like, this really great thing. Like, between him and Macchio, like, who both, like, are not great performers. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, they're not great.
But it's weird because, yeah, I agree with you. But what's weird is at this point, like, Zabka, I look at that and I'm like, should he have been DiCaprio? No.
No.
He should have had a bigger career.
Oh, absolutely.
Somewhat like Ralph Macchio, because he outacts him every single episode. Like,
well, they make each other better too. Like
that's when they're together, it is always better. When Ralph Macchio is off on his own, it's just not great. Like, the stuff with him and his wife is kind of boring. Like, he has a whole other kid in the show, and there's so little chemistry there, really, that, mm-hmm. like, he just doesn't have a relationship with his son, because when they're on screen together, it's fucking boring. So,
But also, like, they also understand, like, it feels like they figured that out.
Yeah. So they just stopped, it sucks because, like, you don't want to not do that kind of relationship justice. But when the people you cast, like, can't pull that chemistry off, it's like, we don't need to keep going here because there's nothing here.
No, absolutely. But I like that about the show, that it continually, it feels like it's continually trying to reinvent itself so that it will find, it's trying to find the formula that works, right? Like, that's what it feels like.
Here's the thing, and I don't want to deter you from continuing to watch it, because I do think you'll still really enjoy it, but it already started, like, the show starts by circling the ramp to jump the shark. Like, it's already there. Like, this season, every episode, it just seems to... It's not jumping a shark. It's like jumping every shark. Like, it's just like, line the sharks up. We're just going to keep jumping them. And it's not that it's bad. It's just kind of frustrating in how, like, now they're taking it way too serious.
So they've shifted over in the Venn diagram of too much. But you know what the thing is that I've already made my peace with this thing being not great, but also not good, but highly entertaining. Like, I think that's the thing that I think
kind of like professional wrestling, man. Like,
yes, no, that's absolutely what
it is. You just, when it gets its hooks in you, like, it's hard to be, you look at it and be like, yeah, this is all really dumb, but, like, I'm having a lot of fun watching it.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's one of those, it's, you get caught up in it. And that's the thing. It's just highly entertaining. Like, I would never call it, like, I hate the words guilty pleasure, as you know. Like, I don't like that because, like, you know, I mean, I'll call something trash, but it's still entertaining trash, right? Like, and I feel like this is, like, the perfect, like, the show is, like, the perfect antecedent of, like, what I would define as, like, entertaining melodrama or entertaining trash. Like, it's no different than, like, what I love is that they got 80s B-movie action films right, but they updated them. Like, they updated them, like, with all the tropes, all the stupidity. It's just done for a modern audience and modern sensibilities, right? Like, at least that's the way, that's what I've been watching. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like I don't feel, like, any guilt for watching it. I like, sometimes I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, why did you do that? Like, why did you feel compelled to tell that storyline? Because that's just stupid. Like, just don't. But on the other side, on the flip side of things, it's like, it's wildly entertaining. Like, it's like, there's no sense that this takes place in a reality, but it doesn't matter because it's so much fucking fun. Like, it really is. Like, even when, like, and especially the funniest part is that I know that everybody loves Zapka and stuff, but what I'm finding is that I'm starting to really love the kids and everything that they're doing with the kids. Like, and that's a hard ask for me. Like I'm not a guy that, like, I'm not a guy that loves kid stuff, like, you know, shows involving kids or, like, high school stuff. Like, it's really hard to make me like stuff like that because it's just, I don't know. Like, it's just, it's one of those things. Like, there are some, but this show, like, I don't know why it kind of just works. I think it's because, I don't know why it works. It just does for me. It's like, it's fun. It's funny. It, you know what it is? It's a little, like, they take little bits of notes from, like, the original 90210, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like yeah. in a very different way. Like they're all types, right? And they can shift inside that type, but it's like there's a fun in it. There's like this like the kids kind of inhabit these roles, and they go from being cardboard cutouts in the first first series to by season two, about midway through, they kind of relax and they become like these characters, right? Like I don't know how these kids are going to translate into like cinema and doing other roles, because I feel like there's so much like they feel like the roles that they have, right? Like they are who they are, like almost like how Machio and Karate Kid never could get away from Karate Kid. And I mean, like my favorite part about this show is that they deal with that in a really weird roundabout way. Right.
Oh yeah. They couldn't, none of the people involved could get out from under the shadow of the movie. And yeah. Like the show itself is dealing with like these characters couldn't get out from the shadow of the events of the movie. Yeah.
The All-Valley Tournament is a fucker for everybody. Like, I mean, that's the thing that I took away from season one and two, is that it was like, you know what? This All-Valley thing is for the fucking birds.
It is very much like the quarterback who can't stop reliving, like, his glorious moment in high school. And yes. It got ripped away from him by, like, some schmuck who just showed up out of nowhere and that guy went on not to be super successful but successful enough, and you're just like, it should have been me, but
car dealership.
But like watching Johnny come to terms with like himself is, it's very interesting. And like that, they continue to really, really like hit that part home. Like even with the Absolutely. Craziness that's going on in the current stuff, and they do still have, like, he does still play. There's a really good comedic moment where they're on an airplane in the current batch of episodes. And the airplane that they're on, I haven't been on a plane in a while. Maybe most of them do this, but it's showing you that it shows the trajectory of the plane, like how you're going to fly from here. They're flying overseas, and he like rings the little bell, and the flight attendant comes, and he's like, "Ma'am, we're in a hurry. Can you tell them just to fly the plane straight? Why are we going in a curve?" And like, and she just gives him this like, okay, sir. And he plays it so straight, and it just works. Like he understands that character, and the kids are all really, really enjoyable once they like get settled into their roles. And like, so that continues to be fun. But yeah, it's weird to me that they split this up into three halves. We talked about that when the first part dropped. Second part doesn't drop till January or February of next year, third part, I guess. And then we have the movie coming out sometime next year. But I did get a surprise drop for a show that I all but forgot about. A season two of, I don't know if you ever went and watched, because I know I talked about it. But it's called Based on a True Story.
Yes. I did see that they just dropped a second season with an entirely new cast, right?
No. It's the same cast.
Oh,
no.
Oh, okay. Kaylee Cuoco then is back.
Yeah.
I know that. Yeah. I saw that they did a season two. Again, like, you know, props to Peacock for never promoting their shit. And never letting us know that they actually have, like, you know, oh, this was successful.
unless you stream football on Peacock, you don't know what's on Peacock unless you boot up Peacock. Similarly, Paramount Plus, you don't know what the fuck is on Paramount Plus unless you boot up Paramount Plus.
True.
So with that in mind, like anybody who missed Transformers 1, which was apparently everybody, it's on Paramount Plus. Everybody should watch this. It's a great movie to watch while your kids are out for Thanksgiving. So, but yeah, based on a true story, season two, everybody from the first season is back. It doesn't pick up right where the first season left off, but it's been 2 years since season one, and I forgot what happened at the end. So, So I had to play a little bit of catch up, because I was really confused in the first episode, but it's still great. It's still really funny. She's fantastic, but it's everybody else around her that sells everything. Like, Chris Messina is, I mean, he's so funny without trying to be funny.
I really do like him as an actor. I get him, like, him and Christopher Abbott should play fucking brothers, because I always seem to forget that each one, because, like, okay, so, like, I saw the trailer, the trailer for Wolfman, and I was like,
oh my god,
they got fucking Chris Messina, and then I was like, oh no, that's fucking Christopher Abbott, what the fuck, dude. Like, I literally today watching it in IMAX, and that looks fucking amazing, by the way. So is it all available on Peacock? Like, is the whole entire season, or
they dropped the whole season?
And
it's half hour episodes. Like, it's very bingeable. I blew through four episodes when I sat down to watch one episode, and I watched four. So the guy that plays the serial killer, Tom Bateman, like, he's also still just so good. But the big add to this season is, I just blanked on her freaking name, Melissa Fumero.
I wonder if it's written by a Brooklyn Nine-Nine person or her husband, because her husband's a writer.
Let's see.
That's how they got her.
Craig Rosenberg's the creator and showrunner. He's worked on Gen V and The Boys, that tracks, because of he worked on Preacher too. So,
Rogan.
Like, yeah, it has this, like, vibe to it. Did you ever watch, the show with Drew Barrymore and,
I can't even think of her. She's a
zombie or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Santa Clarita Diet with
It has that kind of vibe to it, or like iZombie, like that kind of irreverent like thing where it's just
that very crass tone.
Yeah, and it really really works. You definitely can't watch season two without watching season one, but I'd all but forgotten about the show. And then all of a sudden it was like, update like your list, and it's like season two. I was like, oh shit. Okay. So, but then, like I said, in the first episode, I was like, I don't remember what happened. I remembered that she was pregnant. I remembered that they figured out who this serial killer guy was, and that they blackmailed him into doing a podcast with them. And that's all I remembered about season one.
You didn't remember how it ended or anything. So, like, did they give a recap, or like, did you?
Yeah, but it's not a great recap.
Okay. It's not like one of those Netflix recaps.
No.
Oh yeah, I like this.
It definitely needed a good like 3 minute, like, here's what you saw last season. Instead, it's like 90 seconds of like, oh, hey, yeah, remember we started a podcast with a murderer.
Okay. So I'm definitely, like, I had forgotten about it. And, you know, I love Kaley Cuoco. I hope my wife's not listening to me. I fucking love her. Did you ever watch The Flight Attendant?
No, I need to go back and watch it. And we had this discussion in season one. Well, I was like, I really like this show. And you're like, you should watch The Flight Attendant. You'd enjoy it. And I just never went. It's on Max, right?
Yeah.
That's probably why I never went back and watched it.
The first season is great. The second season is okay. Like, I don't know if you know what the reveal is, but if you don't, then just stay away from any kind of like spoilery stuff and just watch the show, because the delight is in finding out like the twists and turns that happen in the show. Like I said, the season two show season two is okay. It's just not, some shows should just be a limited series and that's it.
Yeah.
That's that show. That first season is such a banger of a season that nothing, like, you would have had to have had Lightning in a Bottle again. It's like one of those things where it's like they designed it to be like kind of like a movie where it ends and you go, huh, I really want a sequel, but I kind of don't. And they do, and you're like, oh man, the writing is good, but it's not great. So I will leave you with that. But you know, I mean, they're in the Kaley Cuoco business, Max. I mean, this will probably be the last season they have, because she has like two shows that she's going to be doing with Max now. Like they signed her, like they signed her up for like two big things with, I cannot remember who.
And she's got Harley Quinn, of course, which has been pretty successful for them. So,
absolutely.
Like I said, I only watched the first four, so I don't know how this season's going to end. But it's also a show you could easily do without
a
her.
Different couple.
Yeah. If you get the right cast.
Of course. No. That makes sense. That makes sense. Like, it has the concept where as long as you take that concept and you put it over with somebody else, but like, as long as you do the writing right and you keep that tone, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, it's kind of like the way that horror movies are approached. Like, I'm thinking of Smile and Smile 2. I don't know if you've seen them, but, like, the two, they share loose connectivity. But it's like one of those horror series, like, kind of like Saw, where you don't need, like, as long as you keep the tone, it works well. And I love that. I love when a show does that, where they have to pivot and change away cast, but it remains the show. It's just a new person that's in it, right? I love that approach to things. And if it's such a strong like the concept is strong, right? Where like you get a podcast, like, you know, two obsessive podcasters are fucking like so obsessed that they get a murderer to be on their murder podcast. I mean, that's kind of perfect, right?
So
that's a perfect concept.
The show this season does something interesting. So minor spoilers for this season. So like they start a season one, they start a podcast with a serial killer. Things get escalated. Of course, they had to hide their identity. So once like things escalate to a point, they have to just quit because like they're going to be like, if we get caught, we're going to prison. So, and they're a married couple about to have a baby. So they quit the podcast. So when this picks up, like her, she was obsessed with murder podcasts and she's had to like a junkie. She's had to just like quit them.
Roll off of it.
Yeah. it's just like, I can't listen to podcasts. Somebody turns her on to TikTok and she finds out that there are, instead of like waiting for a week to get your fix for the whatever murder podcast of choice, there are TikToks you can get just immediately. They do these people doing these like 5-minute hidden TikTok things, And so what happens is she winds up getting like the bug, of course.
Uh-huh.
And she starts doing a TikTok murder thing.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
And so yeah, where the first one was kind of lampooning the whole like obsession with murder podcast, this one is like tackling the TikTok thing. It's a different beast than like Only Murders in the Building, as far as like, you know, it's a show about murder podcast. Because it's not as silly, or it doesn't even have as much drama, I don't think. It's very
low stakes.
Yeah, I mean people die, so I don't know if it's low stakes, but ultimately you don't really care. Like,
well, yeah, it's like one of those things where it's like instead of Only Murderers in the Building, where it's absolutely about the person that died, like, you know, like, and our main characters are ciphers for that. Like, this is like, it's about these particular people and the murderer, like the murderees, the victims do not care. Like, they're
kind
not.
Kind of funny how flippant they are about the people that died.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that's hilarious.
It's like somebody ran over a squirrel in the road is the way they treat it. So it's really, really enjoyable, especially now that there's 16 episodes to watch. I think it's a good, like, weekend, like, palate cleanser binge kind of thing. Okay. So, yeah, I'm really happy it's back. I hate that they dropped all at once, but also I'm glad I could binge 4 episodes because... Man, at the end of the first episode of season 2, I was like, that was really good. I forgot how good this show was.
I always love that. That's my favorite thing, is like returning to a show and you're kind of, it's not that you're meh about it, you're just kind of like, okay, well, let's do this. And it's kind of a chore, but then you forgot how much you loved it and what you loved about it, and you're like, "Oh yeah, this is the reason why I love this show." So that's exciting to hear. I will report back if I'm able to get to the first season. Right now we're kind of watching Christmas movies, Hallmark Christmas movies, which, speaking of which, I will counter you and say we watched fucking Netflix's Hot Frosty. And I am happy to report back that it's very stupid. It's exactly what you expect from a Christmas movie, but
the cast, it's fun though.
Like, yeah, the cast.
You can't not have fun with that cast.
No, you can't. And the thing is that, like, you know, they did the smart thing by getting the Meryl Streep of Hallmark movies, fucking Lacey Chabert, and. Like, it's wild to watch her, because like I remember her from Party of Five. Like, you probably remember
her.
Like, that was the show. That was another one of those, like if you weren't around in the 90s, you probably don't fucking know about this show. But I mean, like, you know, Scott Wolf, Matt Fox, one of the London brothers, I can't remember who's the stoner. That's that one. I think it's Jeremy. Whoever was
in. Well, they're twins, Jeremy and Jason.
Yeah.
It was not the one in Mallrats, the other one.
No.
Right?
The other one. Yes. Yeah. Neve Campbell. I mean, and then Lacey Chabert. And, like, I don't know, man. Like to watch this young lady go from, like, that 12 or 13-year-old that, like, acted circles around motherfuckers in that show. Like, only Matthew Fox could.
Lost in Space is a shit movie.
Oh, yeah.
But. There's stuff there, like,
yeah,
it's not any of the actor's fault that movie is shit.
No,
she's great. William Hurt is great. Matt LeBlanc is great.
Yeah, like, I mean, well, but, and then the goat himself, Gary Oldman, is fucking
Gary Oldman just hamming it up. So, but,
yeah.
So Hot Frosty, Dustin Milligan, who is kind of at this, I don't want to say veteran, but like Rutherford Falls was not a big show, but Schitt's Creek became huge.
Giant. Yeah. I'm still expecting them to do a revival of that in like another year or two. Though, I mean, the way that Catherine O'Hara and Eugene Levy having like career resurgent 4.0, yeah. I don't know how they're going to, I don't know if and when they're going to be able to do it, but he is great. Like him as Hot Frosty, as Jack, he like, it's very much okay. Like I think I told you, but I'll tell the audience, it's got this kind of, it's got this very elf but adult vibe to it. Like it's like this very kind of like it leans into the Christmas and it's kind of goofy, but it's also kind of like every actor knows the movie that they're in, right. And plays to it. The only thing I'm going to say about this movie that I did not like was Craig Robinson is hilarious in the movie. His character, it doesn't work. Like the story that they give him, it just doesn't work. I know why they did it, and when you watch it, you'll understand. But for me, it just didn't work because the show is the movie is such a vibe. It's such a like you just want to watch Lacey Chabert fall in love with this fucking snowman with a fucking six pack. Like that's all you want. Like you don't want to have any kind of like there's already enough drama with her not believing he's an actual snowman and then him becoming like her actually, oh my God, he really is a snowman, that you don't have to add in this weird kind of chaotic thing that Craig Robinson brings in. But they do it to a degree to where it's not like he's the James Caan character. It goes further than that. And you're kind of like, yeah, that kind of just, I don't understand. But anywho, it's delightful. It's stupid.
Joe LaTruglio is in it as well.
I mean, the man's a national treasure at this point, right? Like, and he does the Joe LaTruglio thing. Like, and you can just like count your, like you can count your, like, you know, it's like clockwork, right? It's just a lot of fun. Like, it's a lot of fun. And then it forced us into the Meryl Streep of it all and deep diving into the Lacey Chabert, like, Christmas movies and stuff. And I didn't even know she has a series of murder mysteries that I'm very excited to, like, actually dive into. Yeah,
she carved out an interesting, like,
niche
for herself, yeah. For sure. Which, I mean, good for her. I hate that, yeah, she wasn't a giant movie star, but honestly, more women know who she is now than ever before.
Ever. Like, even more than after Mean Girls and Fetch. Like, you know, like, I mean, and that's a big thing for, like, you know, Mean Girls, like, the original is a big, like, for our, like, for the females, even the males in our generation, that's a fucking nuclear bomb crater of, like, pop culture, right? I mean, so much so that we kind of tried to make, like, musical happen, it just didn't happen. Like, I'm sorry, but that is nothing compared to Mean Girls. It's just not good. But anyhow, we've been watching, like, you know, low stakes. Like, the weird part is that Hallmark movies are actually on Netflix. Like,
I know, they actually
have a slew of them. And I'm
okay. Peacock too.
Yeah, Peacock too. Like we were, I was looking around because I wanted to like try to see how many, because like when I saw her, I went under IMDb page, her IMDb page. She literally has like 40 fucking Christmas movies. She makes like three a year. And she has for like the last decade. The newest one I'm actually fucking excited about because it's like literally National Treasure at a Christmas movie. Like, she plays an archaeologist. Like, and her husband is a linguistic, like a historical linguistics teacher. And they go on an adventure to find the true Santa Claus. It's premiering in December on Hallmark, and I'm like, okay, I get it now. Like, I had to find an entryway, and, you know, like a lot of our generation, like even some of the film critics that are out there, like it's not a deep dark secret. They just, like, everybody loves these things, and I didn't get it. But when you have work, the real world, all this shit going on, it's kind of nice to like not have that in your daily media dosage, and you can watch something that's kind of like the ne'er-do-well of Pleasance. Like, it's just like there's no stakes. You know what's going to happen. You know the fucking formula, but it's fun and it's Christmas time. And so like, it helps me get into the Christmas mood. You know, I kind of really like it.
She has 182 acting credits.
Yep.
182. That's insane.
Like me and my wife are talking and we're like, you know what we should do is we should collaborate on a Hallmark script and then sell it to Hallmark and then just say, we'll give it to you for free, but then I want to direct, she wants to write, and then we're just going to just work in Hallmarklandia for like literally the rest of our lives. Because if you really look, all of the people are the same fucking people that work, and they film in the same like 7 places in Canada. And it's like, how could you fucking not want, like, I was like, you know what? I don't want to make Marvel movies. I want to make fucking Hallmark movies. You know why? Because 12 months out of the year, every 3 months, you are making a new Christmas movie. How can you be fucking mad at that? And getting paid and living in a small town that fucking looks like there's this one that they did that was set in Scotland. And it was literally set in Scotland. And it's like some of the, it's like, you know how like Netflix has those pretty shows? And it's like literally a pretty, like, it's just in this fucking castle. And it's just fucking just like, I'm like, yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to make fucking Hallmark movies for the rest of my fucking life. I don't give a shit about respect. I don't give a shit about like, you know, artistry. No, bro. Let me film in Vermont for the rest of my fucking life.
I mean, it's the Kevin Smith mentality of like, I like working with these people. We work well together. We can make these movies for this amount of money and they make money if we do it this way. So I'm just going to do this for the rest of my life. If you don't like these movies, that's fine. You don't have to fucking watch them.
Absolutely. But they make they're copiously watched by so many people.
They get viewers, man. They get viewers. They get eyes on them. So, like, she's one of those people that I look at. Like, I don't watch that stuff. I'm not against it. It's just, like, I don't have time to watch the stuff I want to watch, so I don't watch that stuff. Because there's nobody saying, like, hey, sit down and watch this with me. But, like, I look at that, and people that cry, like, foul about it, I'm just like, this chick deserved a career. She carved out a career doing this. So if they just exist so that she can have a career, like, that's fine. Good for her. So I do want to watch Hot Frosty just because of the cast. Like, Lauren Holly's in it too. And I can't think of her name. She's in the David Gordon Green stuff. She's in Eastbound and Down. She plays his ex-wife.
Oh, yeah, Katie Rich. I think that's her name, Katie Rich. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, she's in Eastbound and Down. Ooh, another one.
Yeah. She's so funny, man. Like, she's just good at playing that character. Like, just perfect.
Katie Mixon. That's her name.
Okay.
Yeah. That's her name. And it's just, like I said, like, I don't know if you could have like it's just fun. Like I said, like, it's a lot like they try to like they really lean heavily on the elf of it all, but like for the most part it works and it's pleasant and like you can't ask for anything more than that from essentially a Netflix in competition with Hallmark movie, right? So yeah, no, absolutely. Go and see it. Check it out. You might actually be surprised. Anything else?
You know what? You asked me before we started recording, was there any news? And I was like, no. And you're like, yeah, I don't think so. Completely. We texted about it, but we got the first teaser and the first images, first poster.
Oh, yes.
For the live action How to Train Your Dragon. Now, I'm a hypocrite. I'm going to say that just up front because I shit on Disney for all the stuff that they're doing in this regard. We also got a couple of pictures of The Rock in his live action setup for the live action Moana that they're filming now, which is weird because Moana 2 is just coming out.
Yeah,
we're going back to that well so fucking quick. So I criticize them for like why are you doing this? Those movies exist. You're just making those movies again and making them not as good. I don't know if this is not going to be as good. And I've seen the people online being like, they literally just recreated the first trailer, like down to like, this is those moments, exact moments in live action. And I'm sitting here going, yes, I'm here for that. I'm here for it.
I am too. Like, well, like we texted about it and I told you something like I, like 90 seconds and I cried and I bawled through the whole fucking thing. I'm going to be sitting like June 13th, 2025. I will be front row in IMAX 3D with those glasses on, with my other glasses on, because I don't want anybody seeing a grown man cry at a movie, because man, this looks like, and they did the right thing by getting Dean DuBois to direct it, who was the original director of the original movie. Like, I feel like that is the chef's kiss here, because he looks like a fucking Viking. I mean,
Gerard Butler looks fucking great as live action Stoic, man.
I mean, he's about to have another career resurgence between this and Den of Thieves 2. Like, can you talk about, like, can we just, like, appreciate the fact that Gerard Butler can play ultimate douchebag and ultimate, like, father figure? Like, and there's, like, there, like, but there's no between, right? Like, he can't do either or, like, he can't do anything in between. But in the extremes, he fucking thrives. Yeah. Like, watching this and then watching all the trailers come out of, like, you wouldn't think it was the same dude. Because, I mean, even if he has a beard, he's so greasy and, like you could just smell the cocaine on him in Den of Thieves 2. But here, like, even hearing, like, just seeing him and then hearing that voice, like, it gave me shivers, man. Like, it was just like, oh, shit, they're going to do this. Like, it's going to work. Like, I don't see, like, as soon as I saw Toothless, and I'm even now, I'm getting a little choked up even thinking about
it. That it looks so, Toothless looks so good. Like, they're really, really selling it. It's gonna take, like, it's gonna have to be massively bad for me not to love it.
Yeah.
So,
but to
even if I just walk away and I'm like, they just reshot the movie, like, scene for scene in live action with live action actors and CGI dragons. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm like, and there is a problem. Why?
But they would have to seriously fuck up the story for me to walk away from it at this point and be like, because I was nervous. I was really nervous. And like, just like I am about Stitch, and we still haven't seen the trailer for that, but like, really nervous for that. But the trailer gave me a lot of hope for it. And I can't. Next year is going to be wild, man.
It really is. Like, I this hit me so hard and so deep that I'm already like excited about part two and bringing Kate Blanchett into the mix, because you know that's the plan.
Like, I would hope so. Like, she's
You got Butler. I mean, why not? I mean, and she would be the, like, I mean, you know, the only thing, like, I love the recasting of Craig Ferguson with Nick Frost. I love that.
Ferguson has that voice, but Nick Frost, like, clearly, that's clearly the dude. Clearly. Yeah.
And I mean, for us guys who've been watching him since Shaun of the Dead, like, for him to get this kind of role is kind of great, because it just boosts him up the same way that kind of Simon Pegg. And I know, like, Frost has been very, like, he's said it himself, he's been very cagey about it, because he likes just being you know, a selfie guy. Like, that's all he wants. But I guarantee you, like, you know, having kids and his kids watching this made him, like, go for this role, which, like, I can't even, like, I'm just very, like, this went from, like, oh, I don't know, this is such a good, like, I mean, the original movie, like, to tell you how much this movie means to me is the original How to Train Your Dragon was the reason why I ended up getting Plissken. Like, I can't even talk about it without getting a little teared up about it because, like, it showed me what, like,
it's, you know, how our dads are like. Yeah. It's that bond of, like, the pet and the person. And they stop being a pet and they become your best friend. And I mean, I brought up Stitch already. I'll bring it up again. Stitch, Lilo and Stitch also, but here's the thing, written and directed by the same people. The original Lilo and Stitch, like they're in Stitch parlance, Stitch and Toothless are cousins.
Literally.
They understand that relationship, and it's why those two movies work so incredibly well. You know, all of the things in those two franchises work pretty well, but those first movies in each of those things are the starting point, of course, but you start with that super solid foundation and understanding that relationship. And like, you know, it's so fucking good. And I'm with you, like bringing him back to do this, which having Stitch also coming out, it feels so slighted, but Stitch has kind of taken on a life outside, like well after they did that first movie, took on a life outside of all that, and has become this pop culture thing, which is weird because I fucking love Lilo and Stitch the minute I saw it, and hardcore Disney heads were just like, that's not a Disney movie. I don't know what that is. It got more or less shunned, not quite like Treasure Planet and Atlantis, but in that same vein of like, I don't know what Disney's doing, but they need to go back to the princess stuff. And I'm like, this is brilliant.
It really is. Like, Lilo and Stitch was like, and it was at that time where everybody was questioning everything about Disney, but it was like, it was a hand-drawn, like, animated movie.
When everything was going CGI, like, for the longest time, Lilo and Stitch, and there was one more after that, it was Home on the Range, I think it's called, about the cows. It's like, those, it was like the flag planted. These are going to be our last two hand-drawn animated movies. Because Bolt, I think, came out the next year.
Yes.
And they're like, yep, we're doing CGI.
Yep.
Yeah. Chicken Little. Chicken Little and Bolt don't, much like Treasure Planet, Atlantis, and Lilo and Stitch, those movies don't, well, Lilo and Stitch does now, but those four movies don't have the fandom that they should. I would put Meet the Robinsons in there, too. Like, those movies don't get enough love.
No, they really don't. My favorite part about Lilo and Stitch is that Chris Sanders, the director of the original, and the voice of Stitch is actually still doing the voice of Stitch.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of thing that you really, really, really need them to do. The only thing that I like, the thing that I like, the weird part is the fact that they didn't get, like, wasn't Ving Rhames the agent and not Courtney B. Vance? You know, the... Like, I don't understand why they didn't get Ving Rhames. Maybe it's because of the fact that he was
doing
Mission Impossible movies.
Yeah, the Mission Impossible thing. Because the thing about it, Cobra Bubbles.
yeah, that's right, Cobra Bubbles. That's
he has the knuckle tattoos.
Yes.
Like there's a lot of Pulp Fiction references because it's Ving Rhames in doing the voice of Cobra Bubbles. But yeah, so that, and so if they're doing an adaptation of the movie, he has some action stuff.
Yeah.
Ving Rhames, I'm pretty sure, will no longer do any kind of, like, I know he would have a stuntman, but I don't think he wants to do it. Like, I think there's a reason he's always sitting in a chair in the Mission Impossible movies. Possible movie.
Yeah, I think so too. You're probably right. And I
just think he doesn't want to have to deal with any of that stuff. He doesn't want to be put in a rig. He doesn't like none of that stuff. And so they just went with somebody else. It's totally fine. I'm sure it'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and then plus they kept the continuity because they have Jason Scott Lee. They have Tia Carrere. Both playing different roles, like actually like existing roles. It's just they're playing the old, like they're playing older, not older versions of themselves, but they're playing like, I think that what's her name is playing the like she's playing like, I think that she's playing like the, like one of the women, like the older women. And then I know that Jason Scott Lee is playing the, like, you know, I think he has like a cameo as like a manager of something. So,
but yeah, you have Hannah Waddingham as the Grand Councilwoman, which if you watch Lilo and Stitch, when you see that character, you're like, fuck yeah, that's Hannah Waddingham.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah, she's playing Mrs. Kakoa, Tia Carrere is. Zach Galifianakis is playing Jumba. Courtney B. Vance is playing Cobra Bubbles. Yeah, Jason Scott Lee is in the cast, but it doesn't say who he's playing. So yeah, it's definitely a cameo. And then Bill Magnuson is playing Pleakley, who was voiced by I can't think of his name.
I know this too. He's fairly famous. Good Lord, I cannot think of his name off the top of my head. Let me see here. Let me see if I can get it.
David Ogden Steers.
Yeah, David Ogden Steers. Yeah, David Ogden Steers. Which is actually kind of a change-up for Magnuson, because Magnuson is typically, like, you know...
Oh, wait, I'm reversing the characters. David Ogden Steers was Jumba. So that's Zach Galifianakis. So,
okay.
I was mixing up the two characters. Pleakley's the real skinny, tweaky dude that was voiced by the Kids in the Hall dude.
Yeah, Dave Foley. Yeah, it's Dave Foley. Which makes sense. Like, that actually tracks that Magnuson would be that, because, I mean, he has that kind of energy. That kind of white blonde dude.
It's wild to me that we're getting both of those movies next year. So... Yeah. Like, Chris Sanders and Dean DeBlois have to be, like, despite everything, like, on cloud fucking nine, that these two properties continue to really stand the test of time and, like, demand new audiences. Hopefully these are both successful adaptations.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, I'm hoping that it goes more... you know, more to the successful and less to the Mulan, because they both worked on Mulan and we saw how that turned out. And
But which is essentially what got them. But I mean, I guess credit to Disney, because like Stitch, Lilo and Stitch was not really successful for them, but like,
it's become the like Nightmare Before Christmas. It's become the juggernaut, because how many little girls have the Stitch backpack?
I want to tiptoe lightly. I think it captured the audience that like Hello Kitty captures.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Absolutely. Like. Okay. So like. My theory is this: Dean DeWaz and Chris Sanders, like were like, okay, so we need to make, like, eventually we are going to, like, in the grand scheme of things, we are eventually going to make a movie about a cat, and we're going to make a movie about a dog. And Lilo and Stitch is their cat movie. And you can kind of tell, like if you watch it, it's very much so about a cat.
As much as she calls him a dog. Yes.
Yes, she calls him a dog.
He is a cat. Like,
yeah.
He builds fucking San Francisco and then destroys it. It's such a cat thing to do.
Now I just want to watch. I'm probably going to fucking, dude, now I can't watch How to Train Your Dragon. I tried. I literally tried. My wife had to come over and hug me and say, it's okay. It's okay. Like, you can watch it later, you know, but in that score may be one of the best scores of the last 20 years.
That's
but,
the one thing Lilo and Stitch doesn't have that How to Train Your Dragon really excels at is the score and cinematography. Are two things, I guess. They treated it not like they were making an animated kids film, like they were making a movie.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
It really, really shows. Whereas Lilo and Stitch, as much as I love it, and I mean, I don't know if I'd say I love it more than How to Train Your Dragon. It's pretty equal. But yeah, it's not treated with the reverence that How to Train Your Dragon is. And I mean, it's just, I know I've said it, but it's mind blowing to me that next year at some point, we're going to be talking about live action versions of both of these properties. And
yeah,
God, I hope they don't. There's so much coming next year. I did not have this for 2024. There were a few things for 2024. I was like, yeah, I hope it doesn't suck. But there's so many things that I'm just like, God, this can't suck, man. Like, and if it doesn't, I don't know what I'm going to love more. Like, if all of these movies are good, I don't know. Like, I'm going to be like, 2025 was the greatest film year, in 20 years.
Yeah. So. Literally, we could very well have that. You just do the first half and you've got things like Wolfman, Soderbergh's Presence.
I don't know if I can go see Wolfman. Like, I do not know if I can see Wolfman. So,
speaking of scary movies, are you as excited as I am for The Monkey? Like, a short story that I never thought that they would actually do.
Yeah.
And Osgood Perkins, the guy who did the really scary Hansel and Gretel and this year's Long Legs, which is a fucking amazing movie. Like, he's directing it. I'm like, holy shit. Like, how can you, like, I don't know if that's not the scariest fucking thing in the world.
I mean, it's got Tatiana Maslany in it. So,
yes.
Yeah. I'm there.
Yeah, you're like, I don't know about this, but yeah, I'm kind of there. I mean, her, Elijah Wood, Theo James. I mean, Theo James has had a big year this year. Like, talk about coming into his own with The Gentleman. Like that dude that I had no thing, like, because he was in the Divergent movies, I was kind of like, oh, you're kind of like Luke Hemsworth.
Yeah,
and then
but
you go around and
yeah.
You watch the first two episodes of The Gentleman, and he's a fucking star. He's like they let him speak in his English accent, and you go, oh yeah, Guy Ritchie kind of knows what he's doing. And then he was also in the Guy Ritchie movie that we liked this it just came out this year. Why does this year feel like a decade? No, don't answer that. I already know the reason why. Decade.
I'll talk about that in a minute.
But we've got two Marvel movies in the first part, and then we've got this, and we've got this and Lilo and Stitch all within the first, and a Mission Impossible movie, and the Karate Kid movie, before June, like June, like that's fucking incredible. I'm very excited for the coming year with movies. It definitely is going to be exciting. Yeah, that Wolfman trailer, Man, I mean, Lee Whannell, like, I mean, he's somebody special, man. Like, I mean, Invisible Man. Like, I still, like, I watched that this year.
Is he just again. Making his way through? So, next, like, so, well, it's been a few years since him. In 3 or 4 years, are we going to get his, I don't know, Creature from the Black Lagoon or Bride of Frankenstein? Or, like, is he just making his way through those Universal Monster properties and being like, you guys should have hired me. I know how to do this.
Seriously. Like, if he doesn't, like, I would love to see him take on the Bride and finally cast Angelina Jolie like she's always wanted to be. Like, she's always wanted to be, like, she's always said, the movie, the single movie that she would drop everything for is a Bride of Frankenstein movie, if she could direct it. But I feel like Lee Whannell is, like, ramping up into a way where it's, like, he could almost say, hey, do you want to star in this and just focus on being the star, and we'll collaborate on the script, but I'll direct it? Like, because, I mean, I'm not a big Elizabeth Moss fan, but I fucking love her in, I love her in The Invisible Man. But I recently watched that, and that's super, like, it still made me tense. It still made me wring my hands. Like, I mean, and I watched that movie 2 or 3 times, but Wolfman looks like he did it right. Like, it's perfect. It's fucking literally Jaws. Like, it's like Jaws set in a family, in a home, right? Like, no big anything. It's very contained. It looks like it's very contained. He's like, you know, they're just in the middle of nowhere. Man, talk about like kind of making a ode to The Shining without like making an ode to The Shining. Yeah, I'm hyped for that one.
So you're gonna talk about Gladiator?
Yeah, let's go ahead and do this, man. So we have not, okay, so like just full disclosure, guys, we've not talked about this, so I don't know where Logan stands. Logan doesn't know where I stand. So we're going to kind of like get into this sequel, directed by Ridley Scott.
Do you want to go first or you want me to go first?
Okay. So I'll go first. I was shocked by how much I liked this movie. I don't know why. I was very shocked by how much I liked the movie. It's very zeitgeisty with unintentionally being that. I won't talk
about
that.
Is it unintentional?
I mean, it's been being made for what, 3 years now? Like, I literally looked up and I think that they started filming at the end of 2021.
I mean, this is the man that made Blade Runner. I'm pretty sure he has a crystal ball and can see the future.
That's fucking true, man. That's fucking true. But I was going in expecting it to be low grade Ridley, and for my taste, and especially the audience I saw it with, this was a fucking rowdy audience, and like I kind of got into it. Like, I was like, okay, I wasn't expecting this. I was just expecting it to be another Ridley movie. I was not expecting it to be like, hold your fucking beer, or hold my fucking beer, hold my beer, mate. And he just got into it. That's short for me. Like, I was genuinely surprised. So with that,
we should probably just talk more about what you liked about the movie.
Okay. No. I want you to be honest, dude. Like if you hated it or you didn't like it at all.
I didn't hate it. I know we touch political, but we don't really get full on political. And the politics of both of the Gladiator movies are muddy at best. And I don't know whose fucking side you're supposed to be on, but so, the first Gladiator is 2000, right? In 2001, or at the end of 2000, George Bush was elected president, takes office in 2001. Like, there's a reading of the first Gladiator movie, like, of like the changing of the guard, and like there's this like line that he says, what was it, then I'll feed them war or something like that in the first movie. Yeah. You just watched the first movie. So Joaquin yeah. Phoenix says something about like giving the people like, or no, he doesn't say it. Somebody says it about him, right? He'll yes. give them war and or bring them death and they'll cheer.
And they'll love him for it.
Yeah. So there's a reading of that movie of the changing of the presidency from Bill Clinton to George Bush in 2001. September 2001. We all know what happens. Like there, you can look it up online. There are people that read that movie as Ridley Scott and company, like saying, this is what happens. And we did it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I think Gladiator 2 works as anything is a reading of like, hey, when you make the same mistakes again, like you're gonna have the same result.
Outcome. Yes.
But it's gonna be the same but worse. And I think there's a way to read that and say, I see what you're doing. Other than that, I think this movie is an absolute mess.
Okay. All right.
I don't know if Ridley Scott should be directing movies anymore.
Wow. Okay. Okay.
I'm being really, really harsh. It looks good. It's very well filmed. The plot is, I couldn't follow the, all I knew was that the twins sucked and I was glad when they died. Spoilers for the fucking movie. Like both of them, I was glad when they died. That's the only thing I knew. Everything else, I was like, I don't, and maybe that's the point. But I want to escape my current reality.
Not live it.
Not pay $15 plus drinks and popcorn and candy to sit and watch them give it to me only with an English accent.
Oh, that's hilarious. But not, like, totally not. Yeah, it, like, taking that section of it aside, like, it's so, like, I'm interested in the way that they basically made this. They, like, the sequel is essentially the same movie that Gladiator is. It's just a remix.
Remember when I said I was a hypocrite and I'm like, yeah. Yes, give me scene for scene live action How to Train Your Dragon? I definitely did not need a shittier remake of the first Gladiator movie. I would have rather have paid my money to go watch Gladiator again in the theater. I don't think what's the lead's name?
Upon the Skull.
Yes. I'm sure he's fine. He does not have the presence that Russell Crowe has.
No, and he doesn't.
Honestly, I like Pedro Pascal, but neither does he.
So they together kind of do this weird thing, and you are right, there's some very muddy like storytelling here. Like the bigger thing is like this whole like back and forth with like revenge but not, and like, you know, like the instant you see Denzel, you know that he's the bad guy. Like just you know, like you know that that's the way that it's going to work. And he's having the time of his fucking life. Like you can tell, like
he's really good. He is fantastic in the movie. Like it is very like, hey, I can't do an accent, Kevin Costner in Robin Hood kind of thing. But yeah. It doesn't matter because it's Denzel. a much like it didn't matter because it was Kevin Costner. So yeah, he's fantastic, but the problem is, for me at least, he's so good that whenever he's not on screen, I don't fucking care. I don't care about what's going on. So
what I like about the movie, what I really liked about the movie was the building towards the end. Because, like, okay, so, like, the one thing that I'm not sure, like, the one thing, like, watching the original that I was struck by was, for a big epic movie, it is very small. Like, they open with a big battle, and then they go very tiny. Like, it becomes a very, like, it's not a tiny movie, but it's a very small, intimate movie, right? Like there's a lot of hushed conversations taking place in really big sets. There's like action scenes, but they're not at the level that they are here. Like here, like everything, it's like it starts big. It starts loud and it goes even louder and louder and louder until the end, where you think that you're going to get that again and it's not. I appreciate like the shifting of things and the way that he chose to build it, to build this film. I do happen to like Mescal in the movie. I like Pedro Pascal. I feel like this is one of those movies where, like, again, it's Ridley with not knowing how to actually cut an effective, like, non-4.5-hour movie. And, like, there's a lot of shortcuts in this movie, right? You can tell, like, there's a lot of shortcuts, like, to, like, you're just expected to know this kind of thing. Whereas, like, I think it just gets out of his hands and it gets unruly. But in the unruliness, I kind of loved it because it's kind of semi Fall of the Roman Empire in a lot of ways until the end.
I wish he would focus more on one or the other. The thing about the first movie is, yes, it is kind of about those things and this like rotten emperor and, the start of the fall of the Roman Empire. But it's a very personal story set in that era, where this feels like it wants to do the personal story, but also really focus on the politics of all that. And it winds up just dividing its time between those two things and not servicing either one of them.
Okay. Fair.
For me, at least.
No, fair. I feel like I don't have a problem with the way that they approached it because of the fact that, like, the twin emperors were always subterfuge, right? As soon as I saw the table being set, I knew that it was like they didn't matter as much as Denzel had mattered, because they were off doing their stupid stuff and then Denzel had purpose and focus, right? The thing that I find interesting and not muddled is the fact that like that particular character is very, very, very pointedly, like, says some very pointed things about the Roman Empire and what his purpose. It's like you're on that, like, you're on the side of with him with it, like, burn it to the ground, right? And then there's the other kind of thought process with Mescal's character, who goes from revenge, and it's very similar to the original Gladiator. It's just, I feel like it's not great. It's good. It's highly entertaining. But as you said, it is a mess. But here's the thing, is that it does still track the same, like, thing. It tracks the same arc as Maximus, right? Like Maximus's arc, from revenge to altruistic, like, I want to make this a better place, not just have my revenge, but make it better too. It's just that the thing is that in his day, and we both probably agree about this, Russell Crowe, there was no other guy that was a fucking movie star like Russell Crowe. Like
the thing about that, and people maybe don't see it this way, is that so like, is Russell Crowe fit in Gladiator? Yes, but he is not like muscle bound, like it's not,
he's not
Rock kind of like Gladiator thing. Are any of those things that came after that were kind of copying all of that, you know, Troy, and like it's not like glistening, gleaming, like muscle, like he was just a dude that was in shape, like you know, not a muscle bound freak, or not some like thin, wiry, muscly. He was just in shape. So like, not that you can see yourself in that, but like it makes it so much more real when it's happening. And like this movie, just especially Paul Mescal, like I hate to knock the guy. I guess I need to see other stuff he's in, because I don't really want to know. But it felt like the Sam Worthington thing all over again, or Charlie Hunnam, or like here's another one of those dudes that like they're trotting out and being like, yeah, he's the next like that guy, and sometimes it turns out okay, like Gerard Butler, 300, you know, and sometimes it turned out okay for Sam Worthington, but it's only because James Cameron was like, hey man, come be in all of these movies, you know, so it's just,
he was good at that thing,
let's
not be, but like Avatar is like one of those things, like he's kind of like Mark Hamill and Luke Skywalker, where the role is defined by him and he is defined by the role and he takes it seriously. So it's okay. Like outside of that, like, well, Hamill is a little bit different, but like because of his voice work, but like Worthington can't do anything else but that.
Yeah, he's had a couple of things that are kind of sort of worthwhile, but overall, like, especially early on in his career, it was just like, what is it called? The Immortals? Is that him?
No, that's Henry Cavill, but you're close.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
That was Bob. I mean,
Cavill's in that theater too.
Yeah.
Despite personally what you might think of him, he did kind of fall into that, like, he's breaking away from it, but it was just like, oh yeah, I'm a muscly gladiator kind of, you know, whatever, and that's the parts I play. So
like Worthington was in the remakes of Clash of the Titans.
That's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I mean, he's been in a bunch of other stuff, but it's kind of like, I mean, he was in Hacksaw Ridge, I think. If I'm not mistaken,
I sound like I was knocking the Immortals. I actually don't think the Immortals is that bad of a movie. It's just such a like been here, done that kind of thing, and I feel that way about Gladiator too. Like, oh, we've been here, we've done this before. This is a lesser version of the thing we already have. So I'll tell you what it feels like when it doesn't happen so much anymore. But when we were younger, maybe even kids, movie comes out, movie's really popular, studio wants a sequel, people involved in the original don't necessarily want to make a sequel, studio makes a sequel anyway, either goes direct to DVD or winds up premiering on TV. And you're like, ooh, it's the sequel to that movie I love. And you watch it and you're like, this is not, it's the same movie with not as good a performance.
Okay. Fair enough. Like that is a genuinely fair argument in regards to this.
I think it's definitely like easy to point and go like nobody in this movie. I realize there's at least two people in this movie that were in the first one. His wife,
Connie Nielsen.
Yeah.
Sir Derek Jacobi.
Yeah. Who I'm guessing either got his role cut down or couldn't really do much because he's in like two scenes, and I was excited that he was back, but like he only says a few things, and I was like, they must have cut most of his stuff out. He is an integral part of the first one, Oliver Reed, who there's some fun Oliver Reed stories about making Gladiator. Also, he may have, because didn't he die right after Gladiator?
Yes.
He may have been the movie that killed him because he would not stop drinking. So,
I mean, like they there are stories about, like, I like people collect stories, that there are multiple stories of Oliver Reed that I've heard about in drinking and like just being a debaucherous asshole that put Russell Crowe to shame.
Like, oh yeah, yeah. Like, Russell Crowe's like, where do you think I learned it?
Exactly, from Ollie Reed. But I mean, you know, Oliver Reed is like one of my favorite. Like, I'll be honest. Like, Oliver Reed is like, he's in one of my favorite movies of all time, The Devils. But he's also in my favorite, even though I love the Disney. I have love for the Disney, but the Richard Lester's Three Musketeers and Four Musketeers, he's in that and he's wonderful. Like, I love him.
The kid in Three Musketeers is another one of those. Chris O'Donnell, where it's just like trotting this young actor out. He's like, he's going to be big. And it's just like, not as big as you think, man. So, like, he's fine. He's just not, he's not that great.
No, he's really not. It is kind of funny to me. Like we can talk about, like, I feel like this is like a better subject to talk about, is like the whole thing of like Hollywood pushing people on us and then us pushing back. Like, yeah. We're like, no, I don't want that. Like, but then like, it's always funny to find the unexpected ones, like the ones that we choose to make like stars, right?
When the ones we push back on come back around in a different way, and you're like, yeah, like this, I like this. Like, yeah, I like this guy like this.
Yeah. One of them, there were a lot in the teens or the 2010s, I guess. Many of them.
A good example, the I Am Number Four guy.
Oh my God.
He showed back up this year. He'd done other things. We talked about this when we talked about Ungentlemanly Warfare, but which also has Henry Cavill in it. But that guy, he was one of those guys where I was like, no. And like, the movie did nothing. Like, if that movie took off, he was set to be, you know, a huge star. And like, it just got pushback. But like, then I watch him in Ungentlemanly Warfare, and I'm like, where's this guy been? I really like this guy.
He just has
to Alex, change,
right? Like,
Pettifer? Is that it? Alex Pettifer? Yeah.
Yeah, Alex Pettifer. They just have to, like, it's weird because some of these guys, they just have to age, right?
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
Like my favorite example of a guy who, that it's the opposite, where there's a dude that you want, a guy that you want to see do well, but he didn't, and it took him forever. It was just because he just needed to age into his late 30s, early 40s. Is Carl Urban? I mean, you remember, like, we watched him in Two Towers, and you go, this motherfucker should be playing all of those fantasy roles because he's fucking great, but nothing happened. And then he was in Star Trek as Bones. And you're like, this Bones would beat the shit out of anybody rather than fix them. Like, it's such an odd casting. What the hell are you guys doing? And then he aged up and he did Dread. And then everybody was like, holy shit. And then, luckily enough, we got him in The Boys. And now he's like, he's the guy that you want to see in action movies, right? Like, you look at him and you go, why aren't we having him in the Gerard Butler roles? I mean, I don't mind Jerry Butler, fine, like, whatever, but give me him. Like, those guys are all, like, the guys that we genuinely make, like, stars out of like, those are the people that I always find, like, that are of supreme interest, because they're usually not the people you expect, right? Like, Chris Pine was supposed to be huge, right?
Yeah, yeah.
What? I mean, he was one of the... Chris Evans! Fucking... Yeah. They've shoved shit down our throat that with the name... And starring Chris Evans for how fucking long?
Yeah, I mean, it's just not working, man.
It's, like, seriously, just fucking go away. Go away, Chris Evans. Come back and beat Cap.
So, hopefully I see something with this. I don't want to say kid. I know he's not, like, 18, but... I mean, hopefully I see something with him that I like. I just didn't think his performance here was as riveting. If this movie was not called Gladiator 2, I probably wouldn't have a problem with it. But,
it's a hard mountain to climb when it's Russell Crowe. Like, let's just be honest, like, early era Russell Crowe, I mean, The Insider, Gladiator, L.A. Confidential,
Something like Virtuosity.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this guy's got something, man.
Yeah.
Which, like, also has Denzel in it.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. I mean, and then like this kind of, like, okay, so like the one thing I think we can probably both agree on is that this kind of like gives you proof positive that like it feels like Denzel is game for anything now. Like, because of the his performance, like I was not expecting him to go far to the bisexuality.
I was about to say, did you hear about him being upset that they cut out the kiss?
Yeah. And I was like, but then when you watch it, it makes sense, because there's all this fainness and this, like, but it's not fainness in the way that you would think it's insulting. It's Denzel swag with just a little bit of, like, femininity and like arrogance that I've never, like, I mean, this man, this is a guy who, like, only smiles during certain kinds of movies, and he is smiling the entire fucking time.
Yeah,
like, even when he's doing the most nastiest of things, he's like that moment.
I agree, man. Like, he shines in it, but ultimately I think that's detrimental to the movie, because nobody can live up to his performance. Like, you did not cast, as much as I like Pedro Pascal, like, you didn't cast the movie strong enough to like, play off that villain. The set pieces are all really, really nice. I think the monkey or baboon or whatever they are, I think that's a little heavy. I mean, it has to be CGI, I get it.
Yeah.
But, like, they're a little monstrous. They don't feel real. You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, no.
It's like the rhino feels real.
It really does. That really did.
And they feel like exaggerated versions of those things.
This is true. This is true. I will give you that. But, like, the boat scene with the sharks, I mean, those are fucking...
Yeah.
That's great.
Here's the thing about the boat scene, though. Like, they're shooting arrows at each other. It's very well done. It looks spectacular. It's very hard to film water with CGI effects and it not be dark. Like, that... It's specifically why... The giant kaiju movie is mostly set at night, because they were using water effects. It's difficult to do. So yeah, it looks phenomenal, but they're shooting arrows at each other off those boats and missing. Where are those arrows going?
Yeah.
Into the crowd. I mean, there's a crowd of people that are just like getting and like, if that had that, and I know that's a very nitpicky thing, but the whole time I was just like, where are all those arrows going, man? How come these aren't not crowds of people dying?
I'm going to tell you, they did die, but you know what? They shouldn't have signed the terms and fucking conditions of Disney Plus.
That's true.
Just saying. Just fucking saying, man. You go into the ring, You go in there and you know, you sign, like, you basically do your fucking etched fucking signature into the terms and conditions, right? So I mean, they were shooting into the crowd at a certain point, like, you know, so it's like, but I mean, that was an entirely different scene, but you know, no. I totally get you. I get you with the with regards to that.
The set pieces do look nice. The battle scenes are really, really well done, I think. I could have done without repeatedly seeing him, like, do the dirt in his hands thing. Like, I swear to God, it happens three times. Like, once was enough to, like, but he, like, kept driving it home, and I didn't understand why. I have a question for you, since you did watch the first movie. Mm-hmm. Because I got into this discussion months ago with somebody, I can't remember who, about, it might have been our buddy Tim, about the first Gladiator movie, and talking about the plot of this one. I was like, well, it's about his son. And if it was Tim said, well, his son died with his wife. And I was like, no, it's the kid from the first movie. And he was like, that's not his son. I was like, no, I'm pretty sure in the first movie they heavily imply, I don't know if they flat out say it, but you just watched the first movie. The second movie confirms it. But in the first movie, is it just implied, or do they flat out say that those two had an affair?
No, it's heavily implied that that's his son, and that's the reason why Commodus wants to kill him.
Gotcha. So it's not flat out said. So Tim's right, it's not flat out said, but I'm right. It was heavily implied in the first movie, confirmed in this movie.
Exactly. Like, it's basically like there is a moment between her and, I cannot remember whether it's Derek Jacobi or one of the other senators, where she's talking, and she's actually talking about, like, having to leave, because it's implied that Commodus has raped her multiple times. Like, you know, like the thing, I think that they actually say it in the film, in the second one, about, like, how Commodus was, like, brotherly, right, like, you know, the brotherly love.
But yeah, they say that, yeah, she was forced into a marriage to a guy who was not, that's where the Denzel line comes from. Because they're drunk and he's getting information. And he's like, yeah, that guy she was forced to marry, like, you know, didn't have much use for women. And Denzel's like, yeah, sometimes I don't either. Implying that, you know, he preferred men. And so they never had a child. Like, he didn't father the child. No. And everybody believed that it was Joaquin Phoenix's character that, and that they had that relationship that we see in Game of Thrones, which turns out it wasn't true, because Maximus, being like the preferred general of the previous emperor, Rome's last great emperor, would have had a relationship with that family, more or less. And, you know, as much as the first movie is about, like, him living and dying for his wife and his child, it's also about, like, oh, you had another child with somebody outside of wedlock. It does muddy the nobleness of Maximus, but yes, that's kind of the point, you know?
No, it is. It is. Well, it's like all hero figures, right? Like, you know, it kind of, like, talks to that kind of thing.
And I hate to say this, but, like, also it's kind of pointing, like, again, arguments can be made. You can Google them. I've read it and not, but it is like, okay, yeah, we were so vehemently, like, upset about Clinton having an affair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know that that's what they're making parallels to, but it is kind of weird that these movies came at these specific times.
Yeah. I mean, Ridley, like you said, crystal ball. I don't know, man. He's like, you know, and, like, ultimately, like, I feel like nothing can live up to the original. Like rewatching it last night, like I was like, fuck, this is just a good fucking movie. It's a fucking great movie. Like it's an all-timer, right? But I mean, this is also Ridley at his apex, right? Like that movie was Ridley at his apex. Like he was, you know, like
even the stuff he was doing that wasn't commercially successful was mm-hmm. like he was, yeah, apex is right. Like the peak of his ability to direct those kinds of things. Like early Ridley Scott is great, but like that era of Ridley Scott is just really something else, man. Like
absolutely. Like it's okay. So like, you know, if you talk about it, like if you start with Gladiator and you go on the 5-year run, it's Gladiator, Black Hawk Down,
Hannibal. Don't forget about Hannibal.
Hannibal. Yep. Hannibal. And this is all within 2000 and 2001. He takes a small break and then he does Matchstick Men, which
Kingdom of Heaven.
And then Kingdom of Heaven, which is the movie that begins his director cut phase, where the movie that he shoots is not the best, or the movie that's released is not the best movie. Because I remember watching the theatrical and going, oh, that's okay. And then at the end of December at one of the local one of the local revival houses, Fox and Ridley Scott made a deal to show the 70mm version of the Roadshow edition, which was the 4-hour version of Kingdom of Heaven. And that was like one of the hottest fucking tickets. And me and my ex at the time, like my fiance at the time, got tickets and went to see it. Like there were two showings. There was the matinee, then there was the evening show. I will still hold Kingdom of Heaven as probably like his either one or two or even three. It's in his top three, right? In that form, in the director's cut Roadshow form, because it is such a full novelistic movie. And then from that point forward, it's a weird downward.
Yeah, it's uneven, right? Like you have a good year, which I don't hate, but I understand why you watch it and be like, what the fuck? American Gangster, solid. Body of Lies, solid. Robin Hood, what the fuck are we doing? Prometheus, half of it solid. Like, yeah. The Counselor, which is a movie that I like, but I understand why everybody watched it and was like, what? Exodus is fucking baffling. It's baffling.
Exodus, I'm like, wait. So you wanted to tell, like, I don't even get, like, it doesn't make sense whatsoever. It's like an action movie for the Christian set.
Yeah, and Joel Edgerton is another one of those guys who early on his career is just like, we don't fucking want this. We have Russell Crowe. What are you doing? Yeah. Like, just give us Russell Crowe. We don't want a younger Russell Crowe. But as he aged up, it's like, oh, well, Edgerton's really, really good. I don't think it was till it's Joel Edgerton and what's his name in the boxing movie, right?
Oh yeah, a warrior.
I don't think it was until then that I was like, oh fuck, Joel Edgerton's really good.
All the Money in the World is shit. Like, it just, it is.
The Martian is really fucking good.
Yeah. Really great. Like, I love The Martian. Like The Martian for me is top 10 Ridley. But then you get into...
Haven't watched any of Covenant. Them. I've seen Covenant. Haven't watched Last Duel. House of Gucci. Haven't watched Napoleon.
Like, Napoleon, the director's cut, is actually quite good. It's almost great. It borders on great. It has the Kingdom of Heaven thing where the first movie, like, the first iteration of it is just baffling. And then you watch the director's cut with an extra hour and a half in it, and you go, yeah, this is the movie. Why didn't you just release this?
Because nobody wants to sit in the theater for 4.5 hours.
No, but we'll watch streaming shit. That's for damn sure.
I do it too. Like, if I saw 4.5 hours, I'd be like, no. But if it was, I did it the other night. I watched almost 3 hours of a show.
the dude's 86. I mean, like when he made fucking Gladiator, he was 62. He was at the height of his, like, all of the years of, like, making failures and semi-hits and, like, true classics kind of all quelled into that run, that 5-year run where, like, he could do no wrong. I'm not saying that his movies are, like, they're terrible. They're not. Like, he's still...
I mean, because if you go before that, it is also... You can argue whether they're good movies or not, but the success is very, very uneven. Like, you start with The Duelist, nobody watched. Alien, huge success. Then Blade Runner, box office failure. Then Legend, like, fails at the box office, gets a little bit of a cult thing. Like, Someone to Watch Over Me, nobody watched that. Black Rain, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, it was a hit.
Moderate hit. Thelma and Louise, moderate hit. 1492,
but
Conquest of Paradise.
Oh, God.
Like, sure. Like, nobody watched that.
White Squall, nobody watched it. G.I. Yeah. Massive hit. Like,
yeah.
It's a weird thing. It's a weird thing. It's not like, it's not a straight ahead road like Tony. Like, and rest in peace, Tony. You're probably looking up there going, mate, what are you doing? Because, like, Tony, like, the thing that I feel like the more I dive into both of their like filmographies, the thing that I always can count on from Tony is that the theatrical version of the movie that is released is always the best version of that movie. Because it is, like, and he always made, like, he made movies that, like, they were always very clean. No matter how visually messy they were always very clean when it
came to the story. Like, he knew how, like, it was that, like, bam, bam, like, go, go. But, I mean, he did primarily make action movies. So
he did. But, I mean, I think that's, but I will say that 90%, if not 100% of his, no, they're all action movies. I mean, let's, like, other than The Hunger, right? Like, Top Gun. Beverly Hills Cop 2.
I think you can argue Crimson Tide. It is, but
it's an action. It's a drama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's his one, like, big tiptoe into, like, the other territory.
That and Spy Game, because I love Spy Game. And Spy Game is, like, dramatic thriller, but drama side. You know, and then we won't talk about The Fan because The Fan is just fucking terrible. It's just it's the one movie. Like, I love Domino. I love
Domino is fucking great, man. And Domino's, like,
wild.
The little trilogy there at the end, Deja Vu, Pelham 1, 2, 3, and Unstoppable. Like, you can argue, like, whether those movies either need to exist or make any sense at all, but. They're very watchable movies.
Yeah, so much so that Unstoppable made us think that Chris Pine was going to be a thing. Like, literally, you watch that movie, and at the end, you go, fuck, man, this guy's going to be kind of like a... Like, when you go toe-to-toe with Denzel, and you come out the other end, like, and you've survived it as a white boy, like, the world is your oyster. Look at Ethan Hawke. Like, Ethan Hawke goes against him. Just as a side, random sidebar, like, if you watch Training Day, it's not just a oneer. It's not just him. It's him and Ethan Hawke. And if Ethan Hawke is not there, that movie doesn't fucking work. And Ethan Hawke is so fucking great, but it's nowhere near the level of Denzel, right? Yeah. But I will say, like, Tony, for me, his best movie is Man on Fire. Like,
hands down. Like, we've had that discussion. Absolutely agree. Yeah. Man on Fire is, and I know Denzel fans will argue that's not his best movie, but to me, it is my favorite Denzel performance, man. Like, he just, like, gets every single bit of that character, man. Like, it's so great.
I feel like Man on Fire is Tony's answer to Ridley's Gladiator. Because if you think about it, it's ostensibly a revenge film. And it's kind of got similar themes, but it doesn't. But I will say that Man on Fire, like, the relationships are stronger in that movie.
Oh, yeah, because for sure.
Like, that first fucking hour. Like, I don't know if Man on Fire could be made today. Because that first fucking hour is so dependent on Denzel and Dakota Fanning. And yeah. It just, like, you're riveted. So, like, when the shit goes down, like, it's so much, like, I fucking love it. That's another one, like, Tony, I always miss. I loved Tony. Like, it was always Tony over Ridley for me. And I can't explain why. I can never explain it. Like, many people have said that I'm wrong because it's Ridley, because Ridley's the master. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I'm like, there's not, like one film out of the entire Tony Scott oeuvre.
If you're sending me on a desert island, you're like, you can take all the films of one of the Scott brothers. The Ridley Scott movies I love more than any Tony Scott movie. The problem is
the ones that you hate.
The ones that I don't like.
Yeah.
Are so, like, just, I don't want to watch those. Whereas, like, I could watch Tony Scott's movies back to back to back to back to back, like, end on end.
Yeah.
Or just watch one movie every day and then start back over and not feel like the way I would if it were Ridley Scott. You know?
100%. 100%. Like,
I love Alien more than I like any movie Tony Scott ever made. But yep. I'm gonna watch Top Gun and Unstoppable and Domino and True Romance, and I'm gonna watch those movies one every day. Like, if you send me with the Ridley filmography, I'm gonna just be like, well, I guess I'm watching Alien again. I guess I'm watching Blade Runner again. I watch a different cut of Blade Runner, I guess. Like, it's just not, like, they're good. But they're not to put it in another parlance, it's not the fucking song you want to hear when you go to the club, man. Like,
exactly what it is, man. It's like Tony Scott is the album, and Ridley Scott are the single drops.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
I can dance to this shit, man. Like, I can, you know, I can vibe with this. Where it's like, it's not long and ponderous, and like, it's short and ponderous. Like, it does ponder things, just like not endlessly the way that some of Ridley's stuff does. And
I mean,
Gladiator 2, like, that's one of the things I didn't like about the movie was, they spend so much time, like, dwelling on things, like, from the first movie that I was like, you talked about all of this in the first movie, which is why I think the only way the movie truly, truly works for me is as this metaphor for our current politics.
Okay.
And
you would be very surprised when you watch, if you get around to watching the first Gladiator, I just wanted to give a side note, you would be very, very surprised at the way that he approaches certain tropes and how he goes over them and over them and over them, almost methodically, like a ticking clock. Like,
it's been
Gladiator 2.
10 or 12 years probably since I saw Gladiator. I probably watched it like 5 or 6 times in the first 10 years of its existence. So I know I saw it twice in theaters and just absolutely loved it, like so many other people. I want to rewatch it. I'm curious to see if I like it as much as I remember liking it. But I do know that other than Denzel, like, nobody in this movie is as good as everybody in the first Gladiator movie. And it just, for me, it just suffers for it because it also didn't help. I was watching in a theater by myself. You watched it with a crowd.
Yeah.
I hate to, like, I can get lost in a movie if I'm the only one in the theater. But if I start getting bored and I'm the only person in the theater, like, you're going to lose me to my phone, man. Like,
yeah,
there's nobody for me to disturb.
Yep. No, you're right. You're right. And I feel that. I can feel that. Like if the energy isn't right, like you can have an entirely different experience. Right. But ultimately, like, I'm not saying it's amazing. Like I want to make sure that I'm clear about this, but I'm also not saying it's a shit wreck. Right. Like, I feel like Tony is doing what Ridley is doing what Ridley does. Right. And, it's just not the Ridley that I think that people probably want.
You what also part of it is, and it's not pulling me in to this character and his story, it's hard not to get pulled into Maximus's story from the jump. Like, you start with that huge battle, and then you have the coup, essentially. And then you have Joaquin Phoenix telling his soldiers to ride till dawn, right? Mm-hmm. And murder this guy, only for him to, like, do the most badass shit, kill the people that are going to execute him, escape, and then you're invested in that story. Like, he gets home, he finds his wife and his child murdered. Like, you're invested. If, even though I did know, like, who the story was about, because you start the way you start, I was never invested in that character. Never. I felt bad when his wife died. I did.
Okay.
But outside of that, I was just like, it's little things. So, like, he wakes up in the water, right? And he's not still fighting. Why isn't he still fighting? He just accepts, like, okay, well, I guess I'm going with these guys now. Like, he doesn't fight them. That's the thing about the Maximus story, is he's not being taken. Like, he's essentially he becomes a slave because he's lost the will to live, essentially. It's like, it just doesn't care. This guy becomes a slave because, like, y'all just murdered my wife, so I guess I'm your slave now. I could not fall into that story. I was like, why is he doing this? Like, why didn't he try to get away? Why didn't he just, like, I mean, I realize he's lost the will to live, but if that's the case, fight them and let them kill you.
Fair. Very fair. Like, I'm not gonna say that you aren't correct in that. But also there is a feeling like there probably is going to be a director's cut, right? Like, and it'll be three and a half hours, and it'll be, and
I'll watch the director's cut. Like, I really want to see what wasn't brought to screen. Like, if nothing else, then, like, Denzel being like, hey, you cut one of the best scenes. Like, I did this and you cut it out of the movie. Like, I want to see that. So, yeah, I mean, I'll watch the director's cut.
Right. All right. So, well, this is a buyer beware. If you're more akin to my tastes, go see it. If you're more akin to Logan's taste, which
I think most people will like this movie. I think I'm an outlier.
I mean, you know,
I know critics are not overjoyed with it, but that usually means that general audiences are going to be like, oh yeah, I really enjoyed it. Yes. So I think I'm just an outlier, and I hate that. It's the first Ridley Scott movie I've seen in, I don't know, like 8 years, like a long time. So, So yeah, I really, really wanted to like it, and I just ultimately, I didn't hate it. I just ultimately was bored by it. So
But I mean, that is more damning than you not liking it. Like that's the thing, is that if it's boring, like it's one thing for a movie to be bad, right?
yeah.
Because I mean, bad can still mean entertaining, but
All right. I mean,
like,
I've watched Madam Web 3 times this year.
yeah, seriously.
That movie's
So
fucking terrible.
what Logan is really saying is save your money and watch Madam Web
It's on Netflix.
on Netflix.
All right. We haven't talked about this. Next week's Thanksgiving. I doubt I'll have time to see anything. What with all the, I have to work, but I think I'm gonna go down to Columbus that weekend. So,
Nice. Okay.
we might be skipping next weekend. I
That's
assume you
okay.
probably have plenty of stuff going on as well. So,
Yes, I do. Kind of, sort of. Yeah, I've got work and stuff, and but yeah, like I mean, I'm planning on trips to the movies again because Moana 2 is out, and my like you know, my wife will kill me if we don't go see Wicked.
yeah.
We're not seeing it this weekend. I was genuinely surprised that she didn't want to go see it this weekend. But I mean, you know, we've seen the musical twice, I think. We've
If
like
nothing
I've
else,
seen it
props to
times.
Ridley Scott for having the balls to open his film opposite Wicked.
Well, I mean, like you've heard, they've made it happen. Glicked. That's what it's called.
Yeah.
Weekend is Glicked. And from all intents and purposes, everything I'm reading, like, you know, whatchamacallit, Wicked is about to make about 150 and Gladiator is about to make like 80, which is, again, just kind of like Barbieheimer. I feel like it's weird. Like, we'll just end with this. It's very weird now that, like, before, like, I would say, like, 2016 and prior, like, studios never did this. They never, like, they stacked them, right? Movies are never released on the same date. Like this is a brand new thing that I'm very weirded out by, that like they actually actively go after it. And it's like Wicked is only going to be in its second week when fucking Moana comes out. Like, what are you doing? Like,
Yeah,
what?
I mean, Moana could wind up being like a just a
Well,
blockbuster on a level that we weren't even prepared for.
it's going to be Frozen 2. Like, to
Yeah.
be perfectly honest, I have a feeling it's going to be Frozen 2, because no one expected Frozen 2 to make a $200 million opening
Yeah,
weekend.
yeah. And then
And
it just
it just did.
snowballed.
Like I looked at theaters in my area this next weekend, and everything on Thursday and everything on Friday are sold out. Sold out, like literally every, like not even like 10 o'clock showings. Like there are like one seat here, one seat there. Like it's literally like everybody's gonna go see this fucking, because everybody wants to see it. You know, I mean, like, and that's probably the reason why they're doing that damn live action movie. Like who, like I don't particularly like,
Yeah,
I
but
love
it's
Moana.
so quick. It's just like Moana 2 is coming out 2 years. We're gonna have the live action Moana. Yeah. So yeah, I'll we'll touch base in a couple of weeks. I will have seen plenty of stuff by then, I'm sure. So
Yes.
maybe Moana, but I don't know. I doubt I'm going to see it. So.
And I will kept my promise and have seen the Penguin. You know, and then just a real quick side note to all of you Giants fans that are out there, I don't feel any sorry for you that
Yeah,
Daniel Jones is no longer with the team. You guys all should be breathing a sigh of relief.
I agree. Until he lands in fucking, actually, you know what? Cincinnati would deserve him. Let Joe Burrow go to the Giants.
Oh no, I was gonna say, like, no, dude, like let him go to the 49ers. Like I would
Yeah.
love
Well, yeah.
like any kind of pain for the 49ers. But you know, who knows, maybe we'll like trick him into an all football. I mean, because like I mean, you know, Thanksgiving football. We could probably record a quick one. I don't know.
Yeah,
But anyways.
if there's time, so just in case. So anyway, yeah, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can check out our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieisle.com. Where there's a ton of home video reviews, including a bunch of 4K stuff. Go check it out. Logan's stuff, like, I haven't told him yet, but like his three volume run is going to be running all of December. So we'll get two there and then one in January. And then there'll be a little stretch before we get the final one. Mm-hmm. So look for that stuff. We'll be back sometime soon.
Yeah. if something happens and we need to talk, we'll find a way to talk. So
absolutely.
we'll see you guys soon.
Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.